Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus and I welcome you to episode 20 of Hercules and the Planetary Powers. Today we'll be visiting with Astrid and we're going to be sharing our planetary practices with each other. The episode is titled Tree of Worlds, and in this case, the Tree of Worlds is our solar system, which is how the Tree of Worlds translates into our modern culture. Greetings and welcome, Astrid. How are you?
Greetings, Hercules. Doing well, doing well. Probably one of the last final days of this extreme heat, or as they used to call it, the Indian summer of autumn.
Yes, today
was amazing. And as everything else, it's like a mixture of this and that, the way this year has been.
Yeah, this has been a very eventful year in many ways, and hopefully the year ahead will be eventful in fortunate ways, in good ways.
We shall see, because we will talk a little bit in a bit about the way the planets align themselves and the predictions that were made for this year just based upon planetary interactions. And, you know, I'm sure many people out there never realized that astrology or the study of the planets and locations had so much influence on our lives, mm-hmm. on the people that we are in terms of birth. You know, you're your sun sign, but then there's a moon sign, and then there are all of the houses and what planet has fallen within each house. Hence, people would read a very broad astrological prediction for the day for each sign. They'd say, well, that's not me, or that's not going to happen, because it's way too broad. We are complex. We are complex. We are not just our sun sign. And this is why astrologers always ask the location of our birth and the exact time. Because when they do a chart, they lay everything out in terms of where each planet was in each house, where the moon was, you know, not just the sun. So it's all very complex. It's not, you know, simple.
No, it isn't. For me, I wouldn't consider myself an expert in astrology or planetary magic, both of which I'm expanding my knowledge base through this Hercules and the Planetary Powers journey. So I hope to learn a lot from you. But the mythology, that I'm pretty well versed in. So
And planet is associated with a god. So if you can take us through that and explain a little bit, that will lay the foundation for the different events that happen as we go along, and just talk about the planets in relation to each other and transits and oppositions, and make it a little more clear so that we can comprehend what they mean by these things. So take it away, Hercules.
Okay, I will share my lore of the gods, and then I'll pass it to you, and you'll explain their interrelationships and how astrology reveals it. I follow the days of the week, and that's my holidays, and every day is a holiday. So I thought that was the best of all worlds. Sunday literally means the day of the sun. And it's the day of the Lords to many people. And the sun avatar that I follow is, to no surprise to anyone, Hercules. Others include Hyperion, Helios, Apollo, and the Christ to many modern people. It focuses on very many things on very many levels, but for me, mostly on the external world. It's what the external world sees and how I happen to interact with the external world. Although, again, that's very simplistic, but it's again, we're just covering the basics now. Monday is the day of the lady, as Sunday was the day of the Lord. And for me, that's Athena. Previous ones have been Selene, Artemis, Diana, And again, we're just sticking with the Greco-Roman or Olympian pantheon, but you can make these equivalences to gods in any pantheon. And the planet is the moon. Now, it's surprising to some people to hear the sun and the moon described as planets, but that is because in antiquity, you had the fixed heavens or the firmament or the Empyrean, which is beyond that. But you had, anyway, the vault of heaven, and those were the fixed stars. And they kind of wobbled a little here and there as the year progressed, but they pretty much stayed in the same place. And the planets seemed to display a will of their own. They wandered around, and later on, of course, they were mapped as well. But early on, it seemed like they had volition and they weren't following the rules. So in Babylon, they started assigning gods to the planets. And we still use that system today. It was adopted in Greece and later Rome. And then with the Romance languages, we still hold those associations. And English, it's by translation. But anyway, for me, the moon represents the inner world. It's the emotional world, the astral world, the imaginal. It's the realm of dreams and so forth. So it's very rich. And at night, you could see the stars, which you can't see during the day. So hidden secrets are revealed and visible. And so the moon, too, is very complex and very multidimensional. So, again, these are simplistic introductions, but Astrid's going to elaborate in further understanding. Tuesday in Anglo-Saxon is named after Tu, who is the god of war. And in antiquity, in the Mediterranean, and today in the Romance languages, it's the day of Mars, who was known to the Greeks as Ares. And Ares is the war god, but he's also the warrior in a very positive sense, although many people have a negative connotation that they follow for war. It's the part of you that reacts to adversity in a positive way and seeks to overcome challenges and no longer be a victim and to be stronger than you currently are, to gain mastery, to learn from what you're going through and to figure out a way of getting around it or through it so that you don't have to suffer that in the future. So it's a very positive thing and a very positive energy. Wednesday is Mercury and Hermes, and in Anglo-Saxon is Wotan or Odin. So Wednesday is Wotan's day or Woden's day, literally, and he was equated with Mercury or Hermes by the ancients, and it still stands today. That is the day of communication. And it's communication, again, on a variety of levels. We're in the age of Hermes now, according to ancient grimoires like the Arbitel. And we can see that we live in an information age and everything's very computerized and people don't always say what they mean. And sometimes it's very cryptic to try to figure out what things mean or what to believe. But that's all because we're living in a information age, and that's sacred to Wotan or Hermes or Mercury. Thursday is Thor's day in Anglo-Saxon, and Thor equates with Jupiter or Zeus, as we know him, and that's the thunder god. And that's basically with the lightnings and the thunder disrupting the old and setting forth the new. And Zeus is taking charge. The Olympian ideal that Zeus dreamed up is still among us today. We still have the Olympics and we still follow mythology. All these things came out of Zeus's mind in terms of what type of life we should be living. And that's the world that he created. And that's the world, again, to a very great degree we still live in, because those concepts, even democracy and the republic, came from the mind of Zeus. And we're still playing in that playground. So for me, on the day of Zeus, you take charge of your life. You know, you use your warrior energy, you use your communication skills, you go for what you have going on the outside and on the inside, and you make that work for you, and you try to actualize your dreams. Friday is Freya's day or Frigg's day, and those were the Aphrodite or the Venus, the Anglo-Saxons. Friday is very sacred to Aphrodite or Venus, and that's the day of love, the day of relationships. Venus or Aphrodite had a very wide range of departments as she was in charge of love. And in Greek, love has many words. You have agape, which is selfless love. You have eros, which is erotic or romantic love. You have philia, which is friendship. So, you know, love ranges from the highest, as we see it today, to the lowest of impulses. And they're all under the domain of Aphrodite or Venus or Freya or Frigga. Saturday is the day of Saturn, and Saturn is Kronos, the god of time, who swallows all his children, and he's very jealous, and he's very set in his ways. So Saturn can be your greatest enemy or your best friend, depending on how you figure out to work with him. If you're able to let go and move on, then Saturn becomes your best friend. And Saturn will poke you where you need to work on yourself and in your life. And he'll set that up, and it'll change your world and many times disrupt it. But again, if you can let go, you stop being part of the wheel of fate and you enter the spiral of growth. Kronos, when he reigned on Earth, it was a golden age on Earth. And Kronos is now the lord of Elysium, or one of the Elysiums, and that equates with heaven. And in if you're a person of the book, Kronos is the god of the Old Testament, because the Sabbath day, which is Saturday, is sacred to him and only him. And there we go to Sunday. So having let go of the old and embracing the new, the sun rises again, and there you go. You're ready to work on your inner and outer worlds with the help of all these gods who are, again, aspects of your life. In the ancient way, you didn't necessarily want to do what the gods did. Their myths or their lessons are not set out that way. Sometimes it'll give you advice on what you could possibly do, and sometimes it'll give you advice on what not to do because of what happens in the story. So it's up to you what to do. You have free will.
Exactly.
And
nothing is straightforward.
No.
There's always two sides to the coin. Truth.
And your turn.
I basically, you know, really didn't know much about astrology or astronomy. I mean, you know about the planets, and of course, we all have been, you know, obsessed with the sun and the moon because it's life force, and then the mystery of the moon at night. How many of us are just so enamored with that full moon and the glow and you know, the effects that it has. But I did get very involved a few years ago through Llewellyn. And mm-hmm. Llewellyn is a very magical company in the sense that it's a springboard for all different kinds of avenues of thought, whether it be astronomy, whether it be magic, paganism, this, that, whatever. But what I found so interesting is that there's always some scientific basis to things. You know, nothing is always one way or the other, just as you said with the gods that represented all these planets. There's a certain attribute, and it can be go one way or it can go another way, because as we know, as you said, like for Aries, strength can be used forcefully against others, but then it could also be an important factor in rectifying wrongs and, you know, going into battle with the strength to do things right. So it's amazing, very detailed aspects of life.
Yeah.
So I got into Llewellyn, and they had something a couple of years ago came across to me, which was the Daily Planetary Guide. And first of all, I was basically looking for a date book so I can write all the aspects of what I had to do when and not be in the wrong place at the wrong time. I just find being a visual person, it's so much easier to see it and then kind of work around it. Doesn't mean you can't be flexible, but it's just nice to have a plan, some type of a plan. And as I got this book and I opened it, which had to be maybe about, I don't know, like 5 or 7 years ago when I started working with this book, I would read the opening, and to the front of the book is a whole section, not on predictions, but the week ahead and where all the planets were and how the interactions of these planets could present itself in certain ways in terms of, you know, what to look out for, you know, certain negative factors because of the way the planets were arranged and who was in power at that point. And you would hear words like transit, opposition, and I'm like, what is all this? So, and squares. And when a chore is done, they basically, it is interesting to get it done. And by the way, Llewellyn has a very reasonable birth chart that you can have done. It's really inexpensive. And they will go through so many different aspects of where the planets are and what aspects of your life are determined by them, what you need to be cautious of in terms of what can be positive, what could be a negative aspect if you're not watching, in terms of, you know, again, as we say, a certain attribute, it can be an attribute or it could be a deficit depending on how it's utilized. So I was just fascinated with it. And I'm just going to go into a few little things before I just read a few things in terms of what Llewellyn, not predicted, but what they said, had placed in writing in terms of what 2021 has offered. And they already have. Next year's done because it's a chart based on where the planets are going to be. So it isn't any type of nonsensical you know, heebie-jeebie stuff, or some people get very into, oh, it's just, you know, a bunch of baloney, or it's just hearsay. It's based on science with the planets. That's the interesting thing about it. But when they start doing things with the charts, they break it into building blocks, and each block represents a different level of human existence. So the eight planets, along with the sun and the moon, of course, are actual physical bodies, and they represent urges or needs we have. That the signs describe the behavior a house or a planet will use to express itself. So each sign is in a section of the sky, and each one is 30 degrees. There's a lot of math involved in this. You know, it's very visual when they break it down. So each one concerns things like one might be values, another one will be communication, one is creativity, and all the things that we need in order to progress in life within time. Anything that is called an aspect is an angle. So some of the planets are positioned an exact number of degrees apart, and they form angles to one another. So, for example, 180 degrees is a circle, but it's divided by two. That's called an opposition. A square is 90 degrees, and it divides the circle by four. So we're working with that circle. A trine is 120 degrees and divides the circle by three. So all of these aspects show how planets are going to engage with one another. I thought that was really interesting. So a particular aspect that joins them describes the nature of their conversations. So the very first building block, to make it simple, the planets. And if you think about the planets, with the different analogies, it's the director of a department in a corporation. And, of course, you're the corporation. For example, Mercury directs your communications department. Jupiter oversees your abundance and growth. And when you need to communicate, you're calling on your Mercury when it's a time to take risk or growth, which is your Jupiter. I thought that was a really cool way of explaining it, doing in analogies. And, of course, every corporation needs an executive director who makes the final decisions. That's the sun, because the sun in your chart is your core, your true self, the one that you present out to the exterior world. And that's really cool. It has the same goal. It shines. Your house in the sun shows what you really want to do, how you want to be appreciated and loved. It is your pride, your confidence. It is your identity. And it shows the focus of the moment. So I thought that was really interesting, a great way to put it. The moon is basically the softer interior side of us that recalls memories, fears, dreams. It is the department of feelings. And what her house and placement in your chart reveals is how you work with your intuition, what your emotional needs are, and how you want your needs met. They also have, now they get into like the body parts that each planet controls, which I thought was really cool. And the moon is, well, again, feminine. You know, it has jurisdiction over the breast, the ovaries, the womb, also rules bodily fluids. It is our internal ocean, and I think that's so great because we always think in terms of how people react around the moon. Or you'll hear people say, there has got to be a full moon going because look at the way people are acting in terms of their emotions and their urges. So, you know, these are great analogies. Mercury shuttled messages between the gods way back when.
Yes.
And now it's, as you say, communication is the computer, the telephone, the internet constantly feeding you data. The position and house in your chart shows how you think and reason. Your speech in terms of handwriting patterns that you do with speech. Different ways you walk because you're moving through your environment and you're communicating with it, working through your five senses, your brain, making you conscious of opposites, you know, up and down, light and dark, hot and cold. It represents the side of you living totally in the present. Totally in the present. And I read somewhere something about the concept of trying to collect Mercury. It's so fluid. You know, if a thermometer breaks and you've learned something about it, it never stops collecting data. You try to control them and bring it back, but no, it's going to be, once they're loose, they're contaminated with other things. And it's definitely a messenger. It transmits message. So its function within us is the nervous system. Really interesting. Venus.
Yes, it is. It's very fascinating.
It is. Of course, Venus tells you how to get what you want. It's your desires, your passion, your urges, how you're in charge of all the behavior that's pleasing to others, whether you're happy, you know, what you do to be happy. It is also, it touches upon money because money is draws objects that we want and that we love to us. So it's also in charge of finances, definitely the senses, because it tells you what feels good and what doesn't. So that's interesting, where Venus is in which house, and that determines certain aspects. Mars, of course, again, we said, you know, the warrior, he fights back when attacked, but it's also your own energy that makes you brave, courageous. Right. Daring, his placement in the chart describes how you act on your own behalf, which is really important. It's the side that initiates activity, how you assert yourself. And yes, of course, the anger, because those phrases came from Mars, the hot under the collar, seeing red, all fired up. It's what you use to be adventurous and bold. Yes, it can be used for violence, cruelty, but it's also action versus inaction. And where we use in your chart will show you how you do things, your action, how you work with action. And Jupiter is has department of abundance and growth. It's a side of you that's positive, optimistic, generous. It's expansive, it's high-spirited energy that motivates you to do things. And so where he is in your chart is a place where you'll have extensive network of friends, associates, folks you can visit, learn from. It also can be the side of you that will cause you to experience the grass is greener syndrome. It's also what you're using when you find yourself being excessive and wasteful. You know, the proportion thing, the words like to and always are the property of Jupiter, just like more and better are, because the planet loves to make things better, more spectacular. And Jupiter corresponds with the litter, which is the organ that filters what you take in and gets rid of bodily toxins and excess. Saturn represents withholding and resistant to change. Stubborn. He heads the boundaries and rules department. You find if you have Saturn, where the chart is it, so you'll know where you're building walls to keep change out, where you may segregate yourself at times, the spot where you may be inhibited or stall throughout life, maybe many lifetimes. Wherever Saturn is in your chart is a place where you'll feel respectful and serious and conservative as well. So the thing to remember is you're most disciplined there. It seems that is the negative aspect would be very rigid, where the positive virtue would be patience, endurance, and responsibility. So it involves boundaries. Uranus, it's where independence is the order of the day, where rules are made to be broken, and personal freedom is the only way to go. If he's the head of the department of one never knows. The little rebel where shock and surprises and reversals are, you know, usual. So it wakes you up to how you are confined, your Uranus energy. Breaks you out of ruts, sets you free. Computer wizards, where he's strong in your chart, you will be strong too. So it's tied to scientific and technological breakthroughs. Matter of fact, the space program and the internet were inspired by Uranus. And it rules the lower part of the legs. Co-rules with Mercury, with the central nervous system. And we have Neptune. So whenever you feel kind of dreamy, where you want to kind of slip out of reality, that's your planet. The official head title is the Department of Avoidance and Fantasy. Let's get away from what we need to do and let's like get lost, you know, but also creative. And that's so wherever Neptune is. Yeah, where Neptune is in your chart will be capabilities of amazing compassion, sensitivity. You'll be drawn into charity work if it's in a certain aspect. Harsh reality, too, because it will be the bigger, we're part of a bigger plan. So here we go. There's this combination of sensitivity and harsh reality. So that's why sometimes it's a place where you'll want to escape. So a good use of Neptune would be sleep, meditation, prayer. Negative aspect would be alcohol, drugs. So the place in the chart is where you're capable of fooling people or fooling yourself. And it also, with the moon, co-rules fluids. Pluto, head of Department of Death, Destruction, and Decay, in charge of things that have to happen, disposer of situations that have gone past the point of no return. So its spot in the chart is a place where there's intense, inevitable circumstances that will arrive to teach you about agony and the ecstasy. It's where you'll be in a state of turmoil or evolution, but there will always be ongoing change, and that life goes on, whether you like it or not, after tremendous loss. So either you're going to reflect on losses or things that are negative and either make sense of them, or you're going to delve into fantasy. So it also rules rebirth, so you'll understand the process, and that's what it is, life, death, and rebirth. It's a process, it's a cycle. So you'll be strong where your Pluto is. It's transformational energy. And it's associated with the reproductive organs. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it is interesting. And given that also, I've assigned them days based on who they share zodiac signs with. Like now that we know that there are extra planets. So for instance, Poseidon has Pisces, which used to belong to Zeus. So I celebrate him on Thursday with his brother. Pluto or Hades has Scorpio, which used to belong to Aries. So I celebrate him on Tuesdays. And Uranus or Uranus has Aquarius. And Aquarius belongs to, I don't remember.
Well, it's unbelievable. And then besides the planets, the second building block are different signs built into things. For instance, each astrological character consists of an element, a quality, and a polarity. And each of those gives people a head up.
Right.
But this is like the general stuff. I mean, we know about the polarities of the masculine and feminine, which sign is masculine, which is feminine. And the qualities would be cardinal, fixed, and mutable. That's the way the energy flows. Okay? So that's what initiates change, the energies. So cardinal signs operate in bursts of energy. The fixed signs are very thorough and unstoppable. It's an even flow, and they endure. And then the mutable ones are versatile, flexible, changeable. So that's interesting. And we know the elements are fire, earth, air, and water. So that's wild. That changes. It makes your sun sign what it is. And then the third building block are the houses, those little pie-shaped wedges of the 30 degrees that we talked about in the horoscope chart. Each one is like a room in a house. And they reflect the circumstances we create or encounter in a specific area of life. And there are 12 of them. So once you know the time and the location of where you were born and the time, what happens then is they break these houses down and place the planets in them. And you could see which planet has influenced that particular house. So the first house is the sign that was ascending over the horizon at the moment you were born. So the first house symbolizes your front door. Hmm. And that describes the way you dress, move, and the condition of your body. It's the first impression you make on people, that first house. The second house shows how you handle possessions that you hold dear, whether it be money, objects, qualities. It's also the side of you that takes care of what you have and the money, the monetary aspects, and what you're willing to do for money, how far you will go and what you're willing to do. So, again, depends on what planet's there. The third house corresponds to your neighborhood. This is the side of you that performs routine tasks without conscious thought. So, and it also refers to your childhood and your relationship with siblings, your attitude in terms of communication style and trips, things like that. The fourth house is the symbolic foundation brought from your childhood, your family and parents who nurtured you. I thought that was really cool. Because that's maintaining the nest and how you will function as an adult, what your world and your privacy factor is. It contains the emotional warehouse of memories that you use when you operate on a subconscious level. And the amazing thing about that is, because we all hear that there are many things that determine the person you are. You know, environment, genetics, and then your actual upbringing within your home. So that would represent the fourth house. The fifth house is the side of you that's reserved for play and party time, entertainment, charming side of you. You know, where your hobbies and your interests lay, your creativity, and putting anything from your childhood into a piece of art. It's speculation, gambling, you know, that's, I thought that was really cool in terms of how you're going to present yourself when it comes time to have fun and to be creative. The sixth house is where you keep the side of you that decides how you like things to go along the course of the day. The side of you that plans a schedule. Your duties. It's how you function and how you incorporate things and tend to them during your routines. Seventh house, at one time it was known as the house of marriage and partnership and enemies. It comes out when you're in the company of just another person. It's how you relate one-on-one, how you use the word my to describe your relationships. It's just, that's that particular side of you there that's determined by a planet. The eighth house is the crisis expert side of you. So when you have extreme situations, how are you going to deal with it? It also holds information on the way we regenerate and rejuvenate through a loss. The ninth house is the side of you that handles new experiences, whether it be travel, legal aspects, education. It's forming opinions and issues involving the big picture. How are you going to place things in the big picture, whether it be politics, religion, philosophy. 10th house describes how the public sees you, your career, your reputation, your social status are found there. It's a side of you that takes time to learn. It's cumulative. It's the behavior you exhibit when you're in charge. Yes, we are chameleons. So how do people see you? And it describes your vocation and life's work, what you consider a calling, and how people see you in terms of a calling. Because sometimes that's not always in sync, how we see ourselves, you know, our calling and what other people may see. The 11th house is the team player in you, the one that finds peer groups, organizations you're drawn to, the kind of people that you consider kindred, how you act within the group, and social activities. And the final 12th house is a side of you that only comes out when you are alone. The secret side, the shadow side, where secret affairs and dealings take place. And it is the room where you keep all your traits and behaviors you were taught early to stifle, hide away, especially in public. It's fond of illusion and pretend play. Like, wow. Yeah. And once I read all that, it all started to make sense. And I had had my chart done a long time ago, and I never really read it. And a few years ago, I pulled it out when I started becoming very involved with, like, past lives. And I was amazed how it got me down to the T, even the things that I really didn't want to look at, you know, that 12th house, that little side, you know, that you prefer not to really show to people. So I thought it was really wild. The fourth building block are aspects and transits. And those are complicated. So I'll just go over it a little bit.
Okay.
The planets form angles to one another as they move through the heavens. If two planets are 90 degrees apart, they form a square. If they're 180 degrees apart, they're in opposition. Planets in aspect have a 24-hour communication going on. The particular angle that separates any two planets describes the nature of their conversation. And astrologers usually use six angles the most that talk about conversations. So there is one called the conjunction. That means they're operating together. They're co-joined as a team. But some pair up better than others. And, you know, for instance, Venus and the Moon, they work really great together because they're both feminine and receptive. But the Sun and Mars are both feisty, and that could become a problem. There's something called the sextile, and that is when the planets are linked in compatible elements. So the planets in sextile are either all in, they're in fire and air because they go along, and water. So there is a more active exchange between those planets, and they work together. A square puts planets at cross purposes. We're talking friction, and one will constantly challenge the other. And they can be uncomfortable with each other, but also there can be tremendous growth. It's almost like brainstorming. You know, one's allowing the other because they're both so powerful. The trine, which is the 120 degrees, are formed between planets of the same element. So they get along. They have an ease of communication not found any other way. They're favorable. The only problem is when people get along so well, sometimes there is this, how could I say, like this laziness or no need to go forward because you're so comfortable and you can you're not challenging one another. The other one is the quincux, and that is aspect joining two signs that don't share anything, not a quality, not an element, not a gender. It makes them difficult. It is frustrating, and it's always you need an adjustment in the way the planets are being used because they're not, they're feeling like they're being pushed or forced. And then we know there's the opposition. That's the 180 degrees. When they are opposed, they work against one another. You may want to do something and your mate doesn't, right? Okay. If they're opposing, you may be struggling between getting a job done quickly or an easy way or daydream about all the possibilities open to you. That's Mars and Neptune opposing. So that's really interesting to see how these different aspects and transits affect the way things are done. And while your horoscope, your natal chart, that's called, reflects the position of the planets at the time of the birth, you know these planets don't stay still. They always transit. So we interpret a transit as a planet as today it's one way in your sign. But then there's other influences that happen as the planet moves along, different situations that arrive, and the nature of your planet, which will, the piece of you which will work on at the moment. So that's another thing.
Yeah, it's a very comprehensive system, and it's multi-layered. I'm still learning all the layers.
Yes.
I remember that Aquarius belongs to Saturday, to Saturn. So I celebrate Uranus on Saturday as well.
And so, then we know about there's something called the retrograde planets.
Right.
And we would say, oh, no. And the one everybody knows about is Mercury retrograde. And that's when it seems, literally seems, like they're going backward. Of course they don't go backward. What's happening is we're either moving faster or slower than the planet that's retrograde. So you kind of have to look over your shoulder. And, of course, we know Mercury because that's the one we're most affected by, and everybody shudders when it comes around for, the, you know, usually 3 weeks, sometimes more. But it is a communication breakdown, depending on when it happens. Issues with communicating, whether it be emails that are lost, contracts, or you'll hear, don't get married then, don't do this, don't do that. It's the way Mercury correlates with Hermes, the original trickster.
Right.
So sometimes things become confused, delayed. Oh, yes, how about the electronics in the car or when your computer's going bonzo? Well, it's probably Mercury retrograde. And thing that it, there was something I read that says that is there a constructive use for this Mercury retrograde? Well, a particular astrologer noted that the ratio of time Mercury spends moving retrograde, backward, and direct corresponds beautifully with the amount of time the humans spend awake and asleep, one-third of our lives. One-third.
Yes.
So that's really cool. So they always say with Mercury retrograde, try to confine activities to those that have attached to them. Repair, return, rewrite, restore, replace, renovate.
Oh, yes. And Mercury went retrograde this time around, and all sorts of communication things popped up.
Oh, yeah.
Drastically affected just about everything.
Yeah, it's amazing. And there are other retrogrades of other planets. For instance, when Venus goes retrograde, it's usually every 18 months, and it's for 6 weeks, relationships and money matters are totally screwed up. There are delays, they're muddled, there's confusion, there's no clarity. When Mars goes retrograde for 11 weeks and then goes direct for 22 months, actions are initiated rooted in confusion or end up at cross purposes to what we intended. So again, you know, misinterpretation. Jupiter retrogrades for 4 months and is direct for 9 months. Saturn retrogrades for about the same time, and each of the outer planets, they retrograde for 6 or 7 months of the year. So actions, if you ever see that and you say, well, this planet's retrograde or that one, the actions that are ruled by that particular planet often need to be repeated, or that what you're planning, don't be surprised if there's a little kink and things don't work out.
Well, thank you. You've increased my understanding a great deal. We still have some time left, but I wanted to share with
good.
You, just like you shared with the planetary guide, and that's an excellent resource. One of our guests was Bernie Ashman. He wrote a book on sun sign karma that brings up past lives. He also does a lot of past life work, and he showed you how your sun sign contains the karmic lessons that you're here to learn. So by understanding and using your sun signs, you can learn a great deal and absorb a great deal and get rid of some karma. And
really wild.
Yes, it's an awesome, awesome, awesome book, and he's an awesome, awesome, awesome guy. I have to post his interview again because it was a very informative interview. But now I had a question about the houses. I'm not up to the houses yet, but from what little I know, the houses, each house corresponds to a zodiac sign as well. Is that correct, or am I not understanding
that? I'm not sure about, you know, to be quite honest. I just know that there's certain characteristics. And what planet falls into that zodiac sign will determine the characteristic. That's where the changes take place. In other words, if you're a Taurus, you're this way, you act a particular way, you're, you know, more stubborn, you're loyal, you're into your senses. But if, let's say, a particular planet that is very contrary to that falls into specific houses, or you have certain planets that are within quite a few of them, they'll say, my God, I'm like a split personality. You know, why am I like this when the astrological signs, it says you should be like that. But that's, you know, really the importance of finding out why, you know, where the houses are, because that has a definite impact of determining your behavior or the way you deal with things. And what you said about karma is really interesting, because Judy Hall has one of her multitudes of books, you know, with the crystals and everything, gets into using crystals and talks about ancestral karma. Sometimes within, and this may be what you were saying about him, there are times that you're carrying the karma of your ancestors, and you have to break out of it. Either you're helping them break out of it, wherever they are, their energy, or you're carrying it within you, and you need to break free of it because of their actions. And that's why you're born, supposedly, during a certain sun sign.
Uh-huh.
So that's interesting. But I'm going to just read you one or two things from the planetary guide for this year when it started. Because what I do when I get the book, believe it or not, you know, I start underlining aspects to focus on. And I look every couple weeks ahead to see what they're saying, so I know what to expect. Not meaning that my life is being ruled on it, but when I know how the planets are interacting, I have a better understanding of what's happening and how to deal with it. It is no different than being that art teacher in the classroom, which I did for like 39 years, knowing the particular class that's coming in and the dynamics of the group and what would happen if certain people were seated next to one another, or if a certain person was having a bad day. You could pick on it immediately. And you determined how you would approach teaching, where they would be seated, and how to avoid a problem should it so occur, you know, and also how to find the best success situation for that particular child.
Wow.
Very same thing. So anyway, I'm reading about this, and it talks about the overview of 2021. I'm just going to read this in just a little bit. After being relatively off the grid for quite a while, the focus returns to the fixed sign axis in 2021. Both Saturn and Jupiter entered Aquarius in mid-December of 2020, joining Uranus in the fellow fixed sign of Taurus. So we have fixed signs here. Uranus and Saturn will be in a close dance for much of 2021, staying in a tight orb that will get triggered over and over by lunar transits throughout the month, creating a T-square whenever the moon passes through Leo or Scorpio. This emphasis will be amplified whenever the fast-moving planets make their yearly passes through a fixed sign. So Mars joins in by transiting Taurus, Leo, and Scorpio. So what does that mean? It means, and you're seeing all these fixed planets, which means they're not budging, okay, and then you know their aspects of Saturn and Jupiter and Uranus, the world will be locked into an incessantly repeated and stubborn energy, which seems impossible to shake off. We will see clashes between the collective, the cult-like leader, and the individual, with all scrambling to find their place in the newly formed power structure. Wow. Is that not on point? And don't forget, this is written like a year in advance when they work on the charts. As
wow.
We shift into this new state of being, it will be difficult to give up the comfortable old ways of doing things. These growing pains will be played out again over the course of the year. Individuals may need to choose to be part of the utopian collective or to follow a charismatic leader. Whoa, how about that?
Wow.
Unbelievable. The era of the individual voice standing up to the man, where everyone got along and respected each person for their own uniqueness and beliefs, may be coming to an end.
So this
on a more personal level? On a personal level, the energy will be shifting from slightly manipulative to a more clear, open fight for dominance. Would you say that?
And
control, yes, control freaks will be coming out of the woodwork with their demands. And steady pace like an unrelenting hammer. This is a year for conditioning and grooming the outspoken so they cease to put up a fight. It will get very tiring. Look for people to check out instead of engaging.
Wow.
You know, it was interesting. I don't know how much time we have left, but I will say, like I said, I underline everything. I look upon it. Last year, I was very worried about Election Day.
Right.
Because as I read, and I don't have the book here now, but as I read it, I'm reading things that are very upsetting with all these planets. And what they were talking about is with the specific planets, you know, Pluto, Uranus, and Saturn, and Mars, and all this aggression, they basically said, you know, I'm just paraphrasing it, that it was going to be one of instability, a lot of questions, and that there would be no clear-cut decision for weeks. And again, this is all put together a year ahead of time. So when the election came, I was very apprehensive because I'm saying to myself, that means we're not going to know if we're having Trump or Biden. And, you know, misconceptions, and they said a lot of, misinformation and mistruths would be bantered around. And it's still going on. And it's still going on because as we read for this year, the overview, it said, incessant repeating stubborn energy. impossible to shake off. Wow. And if I may, I got the book for 2022, and I'm just going to read one or two sentences because I don't even, you know, want to. I'm just telling you what they're saying about the planets, and it says the year 2022 will be a pivotal one for the United States and therefore the world, since the U.S. has been the leading superpower since the end of World War II. This year marks the nation's first Pluto return, which happens once every 250 years.
Wow.
The Pluto return signals major shifts in a nation's power and influence. Therefore, it's possible we may see a lessening of the role the U.S. plays on the world stage. And Pluto resides in the second house of money and self-worth and the United States chart using the Sibley chart. The country could also witness a period of financial loss or U.S. dominance of world markets or a kind of identity crisis. And also, the U.S. will be undergoing a square from Neptune to natal Mars. Isn't that interesting that the U.S. has as its natal sign Mars, as well as a Neptune opposition in the axis, ruling the nation's image both at home and abroad? Wow.
Wow.
So it's going to be interesting, and there'll be more, obviously, more power struggles. What happens? It does say something about big tech. I'm not going to go into that. That we will see a return to a better internet, a kinder internet, rather than having all this control. Because it says here that the Saturn will be in Aquarius, will witness a flowering of alternate tech that will rival the late 1990s or the early 2000s. That's nice.
Yes, it is.
That pendulum, it swings back and forth, having a problem finding its ground.
Wow.
But we are the masters of our own destiny.
Yes,
so I would advise, if you can, people, the Llewellyn chart is reasonably priced. I'm talking like $20. And they will break everything down. And even if you want to just use it as entertainment, not as a guide, you would be like, wow, isn't this interesting? And when they get into your name, even sometimes they'll get into your name and get into numerology if you want to do that. It's wild. But the planets are forceful. And if you have a hard time understanding it, pick up the Llewellyn Planetary Guide because it spells it out so easily and breaks it down so you understand things. And just realize how the moon and the sun have so much influence on us. You know, you go a lot of days without sun and it's rainy, man, oh man, are you one grouchy person? The moon, with the way it just opens our awe and our wonder and our secret inner self, you know, how we, our dreams at night, when you think about it, you know, it's not just the water, it's also working with our dreams at night. So all these planets have their own power. It's just a matter of where they are in relation to one another.
And we only have a couple of minutes left. Can you share closing thoughts? Like, I'm intrigued, and you've convinced me that my time spent on expanding my mind in these directions is very well spent. And there we go, 90 seconds. And I'm looking forward to it. Any closing thought you'd like to leave us with, Astrid?
You are a master of your destiny in the sense that some things are there by the guided by the planets. But once you know where they are and how they affect you, there is the plus and the minus to each one. You can work on your strengths and your weaknesses.
Thank you, very much, Astrid. You're awesome. I always enjoy our conversations both on and off the air, in person and by a distance. And one of the things I want to change very quickly is the frequency in which we get together. So that's something I'm working on. Thanks.
Oh, definitely. It's a pleasure.
Same here, and I'll talk to you very soon.
Definitely.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And coming very soon, we're moving a lot of our interviews to YouTube. So we will have both visual and audio shows on the YouTube. Again, take care, everybody. Be well.
Be well.